Hello, welcome to our program on careers. I'm Irene Lubin, a volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. Today, I would like to begin with an article taken from the Wall Street Journal, the 12th of April. The title of this article is What Tariffs Mean for the Job Market, and the article was written for the journal by Lauren Weber. President Trump has promised that tariffs would lead to a renaissance in American manufacturing, bringing good-paying jobs to the United States communities. It's a message that resonates with his base, especially in regions that experienced the massive shift to production overseas in recent decades, and those who say that the United States needs to be less dependent on foreign supply chains. Trump's trade philosophy leans on the idea that by raising prices for imports to the United States, tariffs will then lower demand for products made in other countries. That would spur American and foreign companies to open more factories in the United States, the thinking goes, and to create new jobs for American workers. But theory and reality do not always line up, and the jobs picture is complex. So here are some answers to some of the questions Wall Street Journal readers have asked us about the impact of tariffs on American workers. What is the argument? Manufacturing once provided millions of Americans, especially men without college degrees, with solid employment, decent pay, job security, and a road to upward mobility for them and their families. That path was broken by waves of outsourcing that began back in the 1980s and accelerated after 2001, when China joined the World Trade Organization. At their peak in 1979, manufacturing jobs accounted for about 22% of employment in the United States. That share dropped to just 8% in 2024. Proponents of protectionist trade policies also argue that bringing more manufacturing jobs to the U.S. would then bolster domestic supply chains and national security. Is that likely to happen? Most economists and other experts are skeptical that job creation will happen on a large scale because planning and building new factories is an incredibly complex and lengthy process. Businesses will be reluctant to do that unless they are sure that the investment is worth it over the long term. A fairly simple mid-sized factory would cost a minimum of $25 million and take around 2 years to build, said Andreas Haag, founder of Streamliners, a consulting firm that helps manufacturers design and improve their factories. Complex projects can cost hundreds of millions of dollars, and new tariffs are adding to that expense. With the White House indicating that it is going to negotiate with trade partners and possibly reduce some of those tariffs, there is no certainty that new factories will pay back their investment over time. The question is, how high do the tariffs need to be? And does the political will exist to sustain tariffs at that level, said Gordon Hanson, a professor at the Harvard Kennedy School and an expert on the employment consequences of globalization. The answer to that is probably no. Sectors whose products require less complexity, pharmaceutical manufacturing, say, or chemical production, are more likely to move some work back to the United States, he said. Still, there is also a short-term risk to employment, recession. The tariff announcements heightened executives' sense of uncertainty, Hanson said. For business, that means reduced investment. For consumers, it means reduced purchases of big ticket items. If a recession happens, workers would experience higher unemployment and lower earnings growth. Are there enough workers? The short answer to this is no. Manufacturers have been struggling with labor shortages for years now. Among the reasons for this, factory jobs developed a reputation as dirty, dull, or dangerous. More young people go to college today than in the heyday of American manufacturing. Production jobs require more sophisticated skills, and baby boomers are retiring faster than they can be replaced. A 2024 report by Deloitte and the Manufacturing Institute estimated that the United States may have 1.9 million unfilled manufacturing jobs by the year 2033. Employers have relied on immigrants to fill those gaps, but they expect fewer immigrants to come into the U.S. as Trump tightens border policy. And how will firms adapt? Their factories will look very different from the ones the United States lost to outsourcing. As workers become more expensive, companies will have more incentive to automate production. Hag of Streamliners is seeing this already. A food distribution company he works with is now anticipating future hiring challenges, so it is planning to consolidate several operations into a single mega facility that will use a computer-controlled system to automate the storage and retrieval of inventory. Imagining having several warehouses with 40 or 50 people, he said. Now you just need 4 people, and they're all technicians. The next article that I would like to read for you is entitled, Gen X Creatives Hit a Career Wall. This article was in the Wall Street Journal on the 30th of March. The article was written for the journal by Stephen Kurtz. Just when they should be at their peak, workers now find that their skills are all but obsolete. In Generation X, the 1991 novel that defined the generation born in the 1960s and 70s, Douglas Copeland chronicled a group of young adults who learned to reconcile themselves to diminishing expectations of material wealth. Lessness, Mr. Copeland called this philosophy, lessness. For many of the Gen Xers who embarked on creative careers in the years after the novel was published, lessness has come to define their professional lives. If you entered media or image making in the 1990s, magazine publishing, newspaper journalism, photography, graphic design, advertising, music, film, or TV, there is a good chance that you are now doing something else for work. That's because those industries have shrunk or transformed themselves radically, shutting out those whose skills were once in high demand. I'm having conversations every day with people whose careers are sort of over, said Chris Washita, who is a 53-year-old film and TV director in Los Angeles. Talk with people in their late 40s and 50s who once imagined that they would be able to achieve great heights, or at least a solid career while flexing their creative muscles, and you're likely to hear about the photographer whose work dried up, or the designer who can't get hired, or the magazine journalist who just isn't doing much of anything now. Gen Xers grew up as the younger siblings of the baby boomers, but the media landscape of their early adult years closely resembled that of the 1950s, a tactile analog environment of landline telephones, tube TV sets, vinyl records, glossy magazines, and newspapers that left ink on your hands. When digital technology began seeping into their lives, with its AOL email accounts, MySpace pages, and Napster downloads, it just didn't seem like a threat. But by the time they entered the primes of their careers, much of their expertise had become all but obsolete. More than a dozen members of Generation X interviewed for this article said that they now find themselves shut out economically and culturally from their chosen fields. My peers, friends, and I continue to navigate the unforeseen obsolescence of the career paths that we chose in our early 20s, Mr. Welch said. The skills you have cultivated, the craft you honed, is just gone. It's startling. Every generation does have its burdens. The particular plight of Gen X is to have grown up in one world only to hit middle age in a strange new land. It's as if they were making candlesticks when electricity came in. The market value of their skills plummeted. Karen McKinley, at 55, an advertising executive in Minneapolis, has seen talented colleagues thrown away, she said, as agencies have merged, trimmed their staffs, and focused on fast, cheap social media content over elaborate photo shoots. 20 years ago, you would actually have a shoot, Ms. McKinley said. Now you may use influencers who have no advertising background at all. In the wake of the influencers comes another threat, artificial intelligence, which threatens now to replace many of the remaining Gen X copywriters, photographers, and designers. By the year 2030, ad agencies in the United States will lose 32,000 jobs, or 7.5% of the industry's workforce, to the technology, according to the research firm Forrester. Last September, Ms. McKinley co-founded Geezer Creative, an ad agency intended to be a haven for Gen X talent. We have been absolutely bombarded by creative folks over age 50, or even approaching 50, because they're terrified, she said. The shedding of jobs and upending of long-standing business models have come at a bad time for Gen Xers. The cost of living has skyrocketed, especially in coastal cities, and the burdens of mortgages, children's college tuitions, and elder care can be heaviest in middle age. Retirement isn't that far off for them, theoretically, but Gen Xers are less secure financially than baby boomers, and they lack sufficient retirement savings, according to recent surveys. The old economy still holds sway in a few places. Legacy media companies that didn't get devoured by the internet, film studios that remain flush with cash. But even at those businesses, the number of jobs has gone down and the workers are uneasy. So what's to prevent their little island from going under with the next wave of change? Steve Kandel couldn't believe his luck. Growing up as a fan of punk and alternative rock in suburban New Jersey back in the 1980s, he has been an avid reader of music magazines, and now here he was, working for Spin, the Gen X successor to Rolling Stone. He assigned and edited features. He wrote cover stories about Bruce Springsteen, Amy Winehouse, and U2. Spin paid up for his reporting trips and gave him weeks to write his articles, which could run as long as 5,000 words. In keeping with the generational stereotype, Mr. Kandel had been a slacker in his 20s. He landed his first big job in New York in 2002 when he was 30. It was the early days of the internet, but print publications were still thick with ads. And so he was happy to sign on as an assistant editor at Maxim, a magazine that was part of the short-lived Laddie trend. At its height, it had a paid monthly circulation of more than 2.5 million, far surpassing the readerships of GQ and Esquire, which began to look staid by comparison. I was in my 30s, making $31,000 a year, Mr. Kandel said. I remember an editor said, "You don't want to work here? There will be a line around the block." There was this sense that you get to do this. By the time he joined Spin in 2007, the industry was in trouble. As readers spent more time online, magazines reliant on print ads were falling. In the early 2000s, Spin's monthly circulation was 530,000. By 2011, it was 460,000 and falling fast. Like many other publications, Spin tried to remake itself as an online brand. It started an iPad version and beefed up its website to compete with a digital rival, Pitchfork. In 2012, the print edition went bi-monthly and Spin started charging less for ads. Then it was sold to Buzz Media, an owner of music and celebrity websites. The print edition folded. We were in the death throes, Mr. Kandel said, whether we knew it or not. The changes affected other fields too. When photography went digital, photo lab technicians and manual retouchers were suddenly as inessential as medieval scribes. The ubiquity of smartphone cameras and easy-to-use editing software made those in possession of the old skills seem almost quaint. Chris Gentle, who was the creative director of the in-house photo studio at the magazine company Condé Nast from 2004 to 2011, said that top photographers used to earn five figures for a shoot. Now, he said, you can hire a 20-year-old kid who will do the job for $500. Carl Chisholm, a photographer who grew up in Harlem and whose credits included shooting Anna Wintour for a masterclass campaign, said that editorial budgets were already shrinking by the time he started his career in New York in the mid-2000s. There's no way you can survive anymore being strong at one thing, Mr. Chisholm, who is 45, said. I worked at a studio. I photo assisted, I did production work, all while shooting small jobs for myself. Even now, he added, if things are truly slow, I am not above assisting friends on their shoots. I have a family. In advertising, brands ditched print and TV campaigns that required large crews for marketing plans that relied on social media posts, a trend that started with the debut of Instagram in 2010. That TV spot you spent 6 months on now becomes a TikTok execution you spend 6 days on, said Greg Paul, principal of R3, a marketing consultancy. Pam Morris, 54, a freelance prop stylist, noticed another unsettling trend a few years ago when a U.S. client asked her to art direct a crew in Asia remotely for a shoot. They're just outsourcing, she said. It must be cheaper. Ms. Morris added that in her group chats with colleagues, the main topic lately has been the effect of artificial intelligence and computer-generated imagery on ad campaigns. If an art director can say, give me an image of X, Y, or Z, what does that mean for our jobs if they don't need to have actual photo shoots anymore, she said. Similar shifts have taken place in music, television, and film. Software such as Pro Tools have reduced the need for audio engineers and dedicated recording studios. Artificial intelligence, some fear, may soon take the place of actual musicians. Streaming platforms typically order fewer episodes per season than the networks did in the heyday of Friends and ER. Both big studios have slashed budgets, making life for production crews more financially precarious. Typically, workers in their 40s and 50s now are entering their peak earning years, but for many Gen X creatives, compensation has remained flat or even decreased, factoring in the rising cost of living. The usual rate for freelance journalists is 50 cents to a dollar per word, the same as it was 25 years ago. The precariousness has affected even those who have risen to corporate posts in the media industry. For nearly 20 years now, Liza Demby managed writers in the marketing department at Nickelodeon, the children's cable network. She started there in 2005, the year YouTube went live. When viewers started dropping cable subscriptions, revenues declined. Ms. Demby learned to embrace a new technology while surviving around 8 billion rounds of layoffs, she said. My job never stayed the same, she added, because the industry was transforming under our feet. Last August, Nickelodeon's corporate parent Paramount cut $500 million in costs and eliminated thousands of employees. In her 40s then, Ms. Demby was out of her job. Divorced and living in a rented apartment in Brooklyn with her two school-aged children, she is drawing from her severance package while considering her next career move. Working freelance, she has come up with marketing ideas and creative content for family-oriented media brands. It's exhilarating, but there's an undercurrent of terror, Ms. Demby said. My severance goes until July. It seems fitting that Gen Xers would reach middle age amid an upheaval. They always had cursed timing. Their moment on the cultural center stage was brief, roughly between the release of Nirvana's Nevermind in 1991 and the rise of Britney Spears at decade's end. Many Gen X icons died young and tragically. A list that includes Kurt Cobain, the Notorious B.I.G., Ayala, Philip Seymour Hoffman, Anna Nicole Smith, Tupac Shakur, Brittany Murphy, David Foster, Wallace, Shannon Doherty, Elliot Smith, Adam Yauch, and Elizabeth Wurtzel. As a Gen Xer, you more or less expected to get reamed, the author Jeff Gordner wrote in The Cultural History, X Saves the World. Ms. Morris, the prop stylist, did not work for 6 months during the COVID-19 pandemic. It was very scary, she said. She and her husband, who have a teenage daughter, together sold their Brooklyn apartment and moved into a rental. The profit from the sale allowed them to pay off debt and put some savings aside. But then Ms. Morris's husband, a 59-year-old creative director and artist, was laid off, turning them both into gig workers. Ms. Morris recently took a course to become a postpartum doula. I've been making images to sell things to people for many, many years now, she said, and I'm looking for the next act. Aside from lost income, there is the emotional toll, feelings of grief and loss experienced by those whose careers are short-circuited. Some may say that Gen Xers in publishing, music, advertising, and entertainment were lucky to have such jobs at all, that they stayed too long at the party. But it's hard to leave a vocation that provided fulfillment and a sense of identity, and it is not easy to reinvent yourself in your 50s, especially in industries that put a premium on youth culture. I know people who said, screw this, I'm going to become a postal worker, said Ms. McKinley, the ad industry veteran. There are still a lot of people who are freelancing, but it's dried up quite a bit in recent years. It is painful. As opportunities and incomes dwindle for them, Gen Xers in creative fields are weighing their options. Move to lower cost places, remain committed to the work you love. Look for a bland corporate job that might provide health insurance and a steady paycheck until retirement? One of the many Gen Xers asking those questions is Mr. Wilcher, the TV and movie director. In the mid-2000s, he made a devil's bargain for someone who grew up on punk rock. He started shooting commercials for Chevrolet, Facebook, and Apple, among other companies, to support his family and fund his passion, documentary films. He had a cult hit with his debut, The Target Shoots First. It was a deadpan chronicle comprising footage he had shot during his first job out of college at Columbia Records. HBO broadcast it in 2001. But cult hits do not pay the bills. When he shifted his focus to making TV commercials, his documentary projects remained unfinished. Then came a plot twist. Those commercial jobs grew scarce because of the consolidation of ad agencies and the rise of marketing content plucked from social media. And with Hollywood banking on superhero movies, Mr. Welch faced new competition from acclaimed directors who had once specialized in the kind of mid-budget films that the studios had practically stopped making. "Now it's a knife fight for every job," he said. "The cruel irony is the thing I perceived as the sellout move is in free fall." He decided to recommit to his first love. The result, the documentary Flipside, released last year, is a personal film about the trade-offs required to support yourself as an artist. In it, he weaves together footage from his unfinished projects while grappling with his career choices in a wry voiceover narrative. For the theatrical release, he worked with Oscilloscope, an independent distributor founded by Mr. Yauch of the Beastie Boys, and he often presented the film himself. "It felt very 90s," he said. "It was that indie rock model. Get in the van, tour with the thing, get bodies in the seats. It made no money, but what it did do, and this is what I believe as a Gen X creative person, it confirmed my belief that continuing to make stuff is the path forward." And Mr. Kandel, the former magazine editor, had a reckoning. After Spin stopped appearing on newsstands, he took a job at BuzzFeed, the news and entertainment site that was seen as the future of media at the time. Well, eventually he and his family moved to California, and he took an editorial position for a while at a tech company. Then he went back to school and earned a master's degree in clinical psychology. For the past 3 years, Mr. Kandel has continued at the tech company while practicing as a therapist on nights and weekends to earn his state license. At a party recently, someone asked Mr. Kandel what he did for a living, so now he took a breath, and for the first time he answered, "I'm a therapist." Things change, don't they, for all of us. Anyway, this is all that we have for our program on careers for today. I hope that you've enjoyed listening in and will enjoy the rest of your day. And thank you for listening in. I'm Irene Lubin, a volunteer reader, and you're listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona.